right. Post council meeting of March 26, 2020 at 11 a.m. is via teleconference. I am Wade Carpenter. I am the chair. Also in attendance is post council director Scott Stevenson. I'll go ahead and do a call in. As a matter of housekeeping issues, make sure that if you make a motion, that you state your name and if you're in favor or opposed, and then we will add that into the record. So when I call for the order, you will say, for example, Spencer Austin in favor, and then we'll kind of move through that so we can check it off. Make sure every time you make a motion that you're very clear on who it is, and I will acknowledge that. Director Stevenson, anything to add?
Yes.
So, Chief, this is Chris Fielding from Post. I need to remind our Post Council members who are listening that they need to self-mute their phones until they are asked to speak or need to speak, so we do not get feedback. And that includes any legal counsel listening in at this time. So just a reminder, self-mute, and when you need to talk, remember to unmute and then mute again. Thank you.
Hey, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Just ignore that last text since you're giving me time now. What I'd like to do is have Marcus Yockey explain why post-council is being conducted under such conditions.
Absolutely.
So,
go ahead, Marcus.
Thank you, Chief. So in regards to the executive order that was provided by the governor in regards to the suspension of certain rules for the Open Meetings Act, the Public Open Meeting Act, we are allowed to conduct this telephonically. The Utah Department of Public Safety already had a regulation in place that allowed for telephonic meetings. We've already had a few meetings with Post Council before, but this suspended the requirement to have an anchor location as well as certain notifications. However, this meeting will still proceed as normal and will satisfy any due process concerns.
Any questions for Mr. Yockey? With that, we'll go ahead and move forward. Anything else, Director?
Nope, Chief, we're good.
All right. I'd like to call for a motion for approval of the December 4th, 2019 minutes. Do I have a motion? Please state your name.
Oh, yeah, we need to do a roll call first.
Oh, wait.
Oh, hey, sorry. Roll call. Right. I got it.
Got to verify.
Okay, I'm going to start with the roll call.
So we have no one if we have a quorum.
Spencer Austin.
Here.
Bruce Bailey.
Here.
Frank Budd.
Here.
Dr. Matthew Checkitz.
Here.
John Crowley.
Present.
Nathan Curtis. Sheriff Curtis.
I'm here.
Mike Haddon.
Here.
Victoria McFarland.
I'm here.
Christy Morin.
Here.
Sheriff Noel.
I'm here.
Sheriff Pulsifer.
Here.
Colonel Rappage.
Here.
Chief Soap.
Here.
And Chief Swanson.
Here.
Thank you. I'll now move to approval of December 4th, 2019 minutes. Do I have a motion for approval?
Spencer Austin, I'll make that motion.
I have a motion from Spencer Austin. Do I have a second?
Mike Haddon, second.
Mike Haddon, Director Haddon. Do I have any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 I'll
aye.
Go through it. I'll now, Chief,
on this one, fine, because as long as
okay.
All right.
Do we have any opposed? State your name if you're opposed. I think we're good. At this point, we'll go ahead and turn over to disciplinary cases with Linda Beattie.
Okay, good morning. The first case is Neil Anderson. Is there an attorney present for Mr. Anderson, or is he present? Is Neil Anderson present? Okay, it appears that Mr. Anderson is not present on this call, and no attorney is present for Mr. Anderson on this call. In this case, the sustained allegation is falsification of a government document to obtain certification, possession, or use of a controlled substance. The guidelines call for a baseline of 2 years. Post recommended 3.5 years. The baseline was 9 months to 3.5 years. In this case, there was an aggravator of a previous post discipline, which was in August of 2017 for wrongful appropriation. Mr. Anderson received a 3-month suspension for that charge. Another aggravator is that there are multiple charges. There are no mitigators. He has 12 years of service. On April 19th, 2017, and August 9th, 2018, Neil Anderson falsified government records, and in 2016, Anderson possessed or consumed a controlled substance. In the 2017 application for employment with a local police agency, Anderson disclosed stealing 1 television and no drug use. In the 2018 application with the same agency, Anderson disclosed eating a marijuana sucker in 2016 while he was employed with the Utah Department of Corrections, and that he had stolen 2 televisions. During a Garrity interview with Post, Anderson only confirmed he had ingested marijuana after investigators made multiple inquiries and pointed out inconsistencies in statements. Anderson admitted to consuming marijuana on more than one occasion while still working for the Utah Department of Corrections. When Anderson was asked why he did not disclose the information in the 2017 application, Anderson said he feared it would have prevented him from getting a job. The theft of the televisions was investigated by Post in 2017 and resulted in a 3-month suspension for wrongful appropriation, which I've already stated. Anderson failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered. And that's it. Mr. Anderson is not here. No counsel is here.
Before we proceed, for the record, Director Haddon, I'll have you recuse yourself. Is that correct?
Yes, I will. Even though he's not employed with us, I was involved in that prior case, so I recuse myself.
Thank you, sir. With that, I will go ahead and ask for a motion.
This is Bruce Bailey.
Sir, would like to make a motion to accept post recommendations.
I have
this is Bruce Bailey.
Okay, Bruce Bailey, go ahead, sir.
I'd like to make an alternate recommendation to move from 3.5 years to revocation, given the history and the behavior outlined in the complaint.
So we have a alternate. Oh, go ahead, Linda.
It's Christy Moore, and I was going to second the alternate.
Okay, so just so I can keep this straight here. So that was Bruce Bailey is making an alternate recommendation.
And just for clearance, it would be a substitute motion.
A substitute motion to ask for, sorry, I missed what it was again.
You change it from a 3.5-year suspension to revocation?
A 3.5-year So we have a substitute motion change from a 3.5-year to a revocation.
Yes.
Bruce Bailey. And I have a second on that from Christy Moore. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to do a roll call. All those in favor, I'm going to start with Spence Austin.
Aye.
Bruce Bailey.
Aye.
Frank Budd.
Aye.
Matthew Checkitz.
Aye.
John Crowley.
Aye.
Nathan Curtis.
Aye.
Mike Haddon.
I'm recused.
Recused. Christy Morin.
Aye.
Cameron Noel.
Aye.
Corey Pulsifer.
Aye.
Mike Rappage.
Aye.
Chad Soap.
Aye.
And Alan Swanson.
Aye.
There's no one is opposed. Any further discussion?
Did we get Victoria McFarland?
Oh, did I miss Victoria? Sorry, Victoria McFarland.
Aye. Thanks.
Sorry, Victoria. I missed that somehow. Thank you. there any further discussion? And then any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Go to our next.
The next case is Jordan Bradford. Is Mr. Bradford present or his counsel?
Jeremy Jones for Jordan Bradford, present.
Is your client present, Jeremy?
Jordan Bradford's present as well, sorry. That's on mute.
Okay, thank you. In this case, the sustained allegation was criminal mischief. The baseline calls for a six-month suspension. The range is a letter of caution to 1.5 years, and Post is recommending a six-month suspension. Mr. Bradford, at the time of this occurred, was a Department of Corrections employee. He had 7 years of service. He separated with Department of Corrections in June of 2018. There are no aggravators. He resigned from his department. This case occurred on February 24th, 2018, when Jordan Bradford, who at the time was a supervisor at the Utah State Prison, entered a supply room where one of his subordinate officers was having a conversation with two inmates. Bradford selected toothbrushes from one of the supply shelves and began sharpening them to a point on the concrete floor. Bradford then used a lighter in an attempt to melt the toothbrush to a point. Bradford also provided one of the inmates a toothbrush so the inmate could sharpen one to a point. After suggestion from the inmate, Bradford allowed one of the inmates to use the stove in the kitchen to heat the toothbrush to a point without supervision. Bradford eventually joined the inmate in the kitchen where the weapon was being manufactured by twisting two toothbrushes together to a point. Bradford secured the manufactured weapons and they were disposed of in a garbage receptacle inside a control room. Criminal charges were not filed against Bradford. However, an internal administrative investigation determined his conduct was unlawful and he resigned on June 30th, 2018. During Garrity interviews with Post and his agency, Bradford admitted he manufactured the weapons. However, he did not consider them to be dangerous because he, in his opinion, the manufacturing process had not been completed. On December 11th, 2019, a hearing was held before an administrative law judge. The administrative law judge issued findings of fact and conclusions of law stating that Bradford violated 536211 with respect to count two, criminal mischief, I think. However, the ALJ did not find convincing evidence to support that Bradford violated count one, which was which was prohibited weapons inside a correctional facility. And that's it. Would Mr. Jones, would you like to speak or your client?
I would, yes. I'm sorry, but somehow we lost the call right as you started, Linda. We just picked up right as you were reciting the ALJ's findings relative to the case. So we're a little bit in the dark, but I'm not sure that's really going to matter. I think all I would ask the counsel on this is that count one was rejected by the ALJ. I don't believe that those facts are appropriately considered here. The only count that was sustained against Mr. Bradford was count two, and as the ALJ put it, he ground down a toothbrush. That is, in the ALJ's word, a minimal value, and it meets the lowest level of the statute. With the recommendation being 6 months, given the ALJ's qualifications about the factual circumstances surrounding this count, and in essence, the de minimis nature of what occurred, we would ask the counsel to consider issuing a letter of caution under the circumstances. With that being said, I'll let my client, Jordan, speak to the counsel.
So I'll make this brief. I know you guys have a lot to do. I just wanted to say that I made a mistake. I've been honest with LED and Post. I'd ask for leniency as well. I've had many months to reflect on this. And I'm sorry for what I did. And that's it.
Anything additional, Mr. Jones or Mr. Bradford?
I believe that's it. Again, we're a little bit in the dark because we missed what you said, but I think we covered the bases that we expected to cover. If there are some concerns from the council that they feel we didn't address, I'd like the opportunity to address that. Otherwise, we can let the council vote.
Council, if you have questions, please state your name.
Alan,
Mike Haddon. I've got to recuse myself on this case.
For the record, please show Director Haddon is recusing himself.
Alan Swanson, question.
Go ahead, Chief Swanson.
Where Jordan resigned back in 2018, even if council goes with the six-month suspension, wouldn't that time already be served?
Yes.
Is that Mr. Yockey, for the record?
That's Scott. Sorry, Director Stevenson. Director Stevenson. This is Marcus. Yes. I agree with Scott's analysis.
Okay, I would make a motion. This is Alan again. I would make a motion to go ahead with post recommendation.
So we have a recommendation to follow post recommendation from Chief Swanson. Do I have a second?
It's Frank Budd. I'll second.
I have a second from Frank Budd. Any further discussion?
Yes, Director. This is Jeremy Jones for Jordan Bradford.
Mr. Jones, please go ahead.
Thank you. I understand that the time has already served in so far as post-guidelines and implementing those suspensions, and the general momentum would be to approve post-recommendation. But I would ask the council to carefully consider a letter of caution here, given how minimal this conduct is. That will have meaning relative to my client. And relative to his future job prospects, that he received a letter of caution over a suspension, and I think that that's appropriate when all we're dealing with is the grinding of a single toothbrush. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions?
For the question?
Please, Chief Self.
If I can just ask Jordan, what was your intent? Did you not understand that grinding of a toothbrush could be used as a weapon in the prison, or can you explain that to us?
Sure, like I had explained to Post and LEB, at the time I had an extra officer with me. We had a inmate that was volunteering information that usually they'd keep quiet about. I had thought bringing another officer and being on camera that we'd covered our bases. It was a Sunday, I believe. And so I was the OIC of my facility and thought that if we had taken this after he showed us how they're making it and just take it, we could then make a vulnerability training about this. So that was my intent at the time. And as I said, I really recognized that this was a grievous mistake.
Okay.
Bruce Bailey.
Go ahead, Mr. Bailey.
I would counter-argue that he provided an inmate with a potential weapon that could have been used against officers. So a six-month suspension is being generous, in my opinion.
And this is Linda Vitti. I just want to make sure the record is clear that it wasn't a single toothbrush. That's not an accurate reflection of the facts that were found at the hearing.
Any further
questions?
This is
Jeremy Jones. This is Jeremy Jones. I'm sorry. I'm going off of the ALJ's findings. The findings were, quote, he grabbed a toothbrush out of boredom and began grinding it on the floor of room 9. He was intentionally destroying UDC property for no good purpose. And so the findings before the ALJ are a single toothbrush. The allegation that this constituted a weapon was dismissed by the ALJ. That is not appropriately considered by the council.
Okay, Jeremy, I agree that with respect to the, you are correct that with respect to the finding of criminal mischief, the judge may have only been referring to one toothbrush, but that's true. With respect to that charge, that may be what he found.
Any further questions for Mr. Jones or Mr. Bradford? So we currently have a motion from Chief Swanson to go with 6-month suspension and a second from, I believe it was Frank Budd, is that correct?
Yes.
Do we have, I'll go ahead with roll call. Spence Austin?
Aye.
Bruce Bailey?
Aye.
Frank Budd?
Aye.
Matthew Checkitz?
Aye.
John Crowley?
Aye.
Nathan Curtis?
Aye.
Mike Haddon, I was recused. Victoria McFarland?
Aye.
Christy Morin?
Aye.
Cameron Noel?
Aye.
Mike, Corey Pulsifer?
Aye.
Mike Rappage?
Aye.
Chad Soap?
Aye.
And Alan Swanson?
Aye.
Seeing none opposed, the motion passes. We'll now have our next, I think it's Jordan Bradford. Oh, sorry, Silver Brown.
Chief Carpenter, Alan Swanson, I have just a quick question.
Go ahead, sir.
This is probably more for our legal team to answer, but just for the sake of time in the future on these, instead of doing a roll call for aye, can we just do anyone opposed? And then
yes,
assume?
We can.
Okay.
Is that okay then? So I can just ask for opposed, is that correct?
Yeah, and then just verify who has been opposed. And so you could ask for if there's, just ask for a vote and then ask if there's any opposed and then identify who is opposed to it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Ms. Beattie?
Okay, this is Linda again. The next case is Silver Brown. The sustained allegations in this case were lying under Garrity, falsification of a government record, and theft. The range is 3 years to revocation. The baseline is revocation, and Post recommends revocation. At the time this occurred, Silver Brown was employed by the Utah Highway Patrol. He's currently employed, I believe, still, unless something's changed by BYU police. He had 16 years of service. He resigned from Utah Highway Patrol. On or about July 5th, 2018, Silver Brown was investigated by his agency for discrepancies on his daily logs and timesheets throughout multiple days. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me just back up for just a moment. There's an aggravator in this case, and the aggravator is that he had a previous Post case. It was a DCI violation that resulted in a letter of caution in August of 2016. The other aggravator in this case is that there are multiple charges, I believe, multiple counts. So on or about July 5th, 2018, Silver Brown was investigated by his agency, then Utah Highway Patrol, for discrepancies on his daily logs and timesheets throughout multiple days. The investigation determined that Brown had completed inaccurate daily logs on March 29th, 2018, April 2nd, 2018, June 1st, 2018, and June 19th, 2018. The investigation further disclosed that Brown lied to his division commander on July 19th, 2018, OPS on September 19th, 2018, and Post on December 4th, 2018, after having been given warnings based on Garrity v. New Jersey. The OPS and Post investigations verified Brown's lying about the hours he claimed on his timesheets. Silver Brown waived his right to a hearing on December 18, 2019, and stipulated the facts contained in the notice of agency action. And that's it. Mr. Brown, are you present, or is Mr. Scordis or another attorney present for you?
We are both here. This is Greg Scordis, and I have Silver Brown in the conference room with me. Thank you.
Would you like to be heard?
Yes, thank you. I think I'd like Silver to just address some of these issues briefly. We did waive the hearing, but I wanted the counsel to hear from him why we don't consider these to be lies under Garrity,
And I'll let Silver address them, and I told him to keep his remarks brief.
Thank you, Post Counsel. On the March 29th issue, the two-hour public presentation, that was a presentation that was done at the at a Dixon Middle School in Provo for my daughter, and I had mixed some of those details with other presentations that I've done in the past, and so details weren't clear to me at that time. These, again, just to back up, at the time of the interview, all the allegations were 4 to 6 months prior, and so it was very difficult for me to try and remember details that the interviewers were asking for. On March 2nd, the two-hour driver's April 2nd, the two-hour driver's license hearing, it was a normal practice of mine to attend the hearing at the driver's license office in Orem. On this particular day, I created a log for a two-hour hearing, which is normal for a being present at the hearing, but due to some circumstances at home, I was not able to attend, so I called in, did a telephonic hearing, and forgot to change the logs to a 1 hour instead of 2 hours. And that was I believe it was a simple mistake there. The other original allegation were on April 3rd and April 4th, traveling to overtime shifts and stopping vehicles on the way to the overtime shifts and claiming those times. I was told by past supervisors that any enforcement done to and from overtime shifts that I need to claim those hours. And it was mentioned by the investigators that that was something that I did all the time, and it was not. They were only able to produce two instances of all the many overtime shifts that I've worked. On June 1st, a driver's license hearing that it was alleged that I did not attend, and I was very adamant that I was there, I remembered the case, and that I attended the hearing. Well, the interviewers or the investigators were very adamant that I was not there, and they accused me of lying that I was not at the hearing because they had done their investigation. Well, a day or two later, they texted me saying that, yeah, it was in fact that I did attend the hearing and that there's proof that I was present. On June 19th, the hours that were allegedly claimed for training, those were all during regular shift. And so those were not claimed in any other, in any fraudulent manner. Those were all during regular shift, and the training hours there were only claimed for training hours. Post counsel, the only way, the only thing I can honestly say that because I mixed up details that I was trying to pull from 4 to 6 months prior, that's the only reason that I mentioned to my captain at that time that I lied to him, because I was mixing up information. And that is the honest truth. It's not me. If you look at my history, my nearly 16 years of service, nothing like this has occurred. It's been a year, nearly a year and a half since I resigned, and it's been a tornado. It's been And anyway, I apologize. I plead for your mercy, for your understanding, and I just like to get back to something that I really enjoy and love and good at. And with that, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
This is Linda Beattie. May I be heard?
Ms. Beattie, go ahead.
Yes. Since Mr. Brown has now given another version of the events, would it be permissible for me to read from his previous interviews, which contradict the current statements that he has now made to Post Counsel?
Please proceed.
Thank you. With respect, and I'm reading from a recorded transcript. With respect to the incident on June 19th, 2018, when he claimed to have been working on training bulletins for 8 hours and 58 minutes, he was asked at 54:10 in the interview, were you making up time? His answer, I believe I may have. At 54:26, he was asked, so you weren't working those hours? You were falsifying your data logs and you were falsifying your time cards? His answer, correct. Question, for this day, yes. Let me continue, please, unless you don't need to hear any additional. Question at 54:57, have you done this in the past? Answer, probably. Question, why would you make up time? What was the reason? Answer, my guess would be to avoid using annual leave, sick leave, excess. That's my guess. That's probably what happened. Question, so that's what happened on June 1st as well? I didn't have his answer recorded on that one. Sorry. At 100.02, he was asked, let me be brutally succinct. Did you lie to him, referring to Captain Nyber, about what happened, about what you did on that day? Answer, yes. Would you like me to continue? Or at 102.45, he said, did you complete any DTVs on June 1st? Answer, no. I can continue for quite a long time on this, but I think post-counsel gets the point. Mr. Brown has presented yet another, so we were in the fourth version of the facts now today.
Any questions for Ms. Beattie? Hearing none, I'll ask for a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Colonel Rappage, I'm going to recuse myself.
For the record, please show Colonel Rappage has recused himself, as he's the Colonel of Highway Patrol.
Do I have a question for the trooper or his counsel?
Pardon?
This is Sheriff Noel. I have a question for the trooper or his counsel before we go forward with the vote.
Counsel? Yes, sir. Oh, go ahead. Who's answering?
We're both here, so we'll answer.
I would like you, counsel, or your or the trooper to respond to Mrs. Beattie to what she just said. Why did you admit to those things?
Sir, I did not have all the details with me at that time. I was not. I admit my logs weren't accurate, and that's my bad. All of it weren't documented, but I believe, going back to, my schedule, June 19th, that was a regular shift, up at the state capitol and logging, DTBs throughout the shift. And I tried to see if the discovery printed that out, and they did not. And also, it did not reflect on the time card copy that was provided in the discovery. And so why did they leave that out? I don't know. But that's my recollection when I went back to my records to see where I was on that day, and it reflected that I was on a regular shift up at the state capitol, working a regular shift and also working on training bulletins throughout the shift. And that's why it reflected, but they were not, it's very different from what I did say that day, but again, I did not have all the details with me or my logs or accurate logs or my my calendar to show where I was and what I was doing.
If I may point out, the video indicates that, in fact, Captain Nyber provided the logs to then-Trooper Brown, and he had the logs with him during the videotaped interview.
Yes, I did have the logs, but again, like I said, you know, my logs weren't accurate, and there were a lot of missed information there. So that's on that.
This is Victoria. I have a question.
Please, Victoria.
So, am I understanding correctly that the position today is that your logs were not accurate at the time, and that was it seems to be a recurring type of issue, and because your logs were not accurate, you were not accurately inputting information, that somehow led to some confusion that should now, for whatever reason, be a mitigating factor?
Well, we're not, this is Greg Skordis. It's certainly not a mitigating factor. He's owned the fact that his logs were inaccurate. But if you read the investigative report, he's confronted with the inaccuracy of his logs and then is told, so therefore you must have lied. And he says, yes. But as we look at it now, after reviewing all the facts, he was wrong. His logs were wrong. His statements were wrong, and he's owned that. But I think that's significantly different than just outright lying about it. But when he's confronted and said, so you're wrong, you lied, he says yes, because he's thinking of it different than the rest of us do. And I just don't think that this was someone who was lying to an investigator, but is someone who is looking at something that occurred several months earlier and saying, you're right, I did that wrong. And I would just, it's not mitigation, but it's certainly not a falsification or a lie.
But he's given multiple opportunities, right? He's given an opportunity with the documentation to review this with the captain, and then a period of time goes by, and then he's approached by professional standards. So it's not like this all happens together. There was some time in between the interaction with the captain and professional standards where he was put on notice and had the opportunity to, you know, kind of gather his thoughts, gather information, and then with that acknowledges to professional standards that he's lied.
Yes, ma'am.
This is Silver Brown speaking.
Sorry. So the original allegations were, there were three. There were the March 29th, the April 2nd, and April 3rd, and April 4th, which those were together. After those original allegations, then I was questioned later about June 1st and June 19th, which I had no idea or no knowledge of from the original allegations.
Question from Christy Moore.
Go ahead, Christy.
Mr. Brown, were you given any training or progressive discipline about the misunderstanding, or did it go straight to investigation?
It went straight to investigations. After the original allegations that I wrote a memo about explaining what they were, and that's what I was questioned about, and then later on I was questioned about two separate incidences that they went ahead and looked for and found. And from there, it went straight to professional standards.
This is Linda Beattie. Let me just read into the record one more time something I stated already, just to clarify everything.
So if you've already stated it already, why do you need to read it again, Linda?
Because I think
you've made your position as crystal clear as you can.
Well, I would ask everyone who's listening then to refer back to what I stated occurred at 5457. Why would you make up the time? What was the reason? My guess would be to avoid using annual leave, sick leave. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Any further questions? Hearing none, the post recommendation is for revocation. All those in favor?
We need a motion.
Do I have a motion to accept the post recommendation?
Or any motion?
This is Christy Moore. Can I make a motion?
Yes, go ahead, Christy.
I'd like to make a recommendation for 3.5 year suspension rather than revocation.
So I have a recommendation for a 3.5 year suspension versus revocation. Do I have a second?
Victoria, I second that.
I have a second from Victoria. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote and then ask if anyone is opposed. Actually, is there anyone opposed to that? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
The motion passes. Thank you. Next is Joseph Hawes. Ms. Beattie?
Yes. Next case is Sean Fox, I believe.
I think, let me see if I've got, yeah, Sean Fox, sorry about that.
Okay, Sean Fox. Is Sean Fox present or is the council present? Okay, Sean Fox has not responded. No counsel has responded for Sean Fox. The sustained allegations are written false statement, willful falsification of an application to obtain certification. The guidelines baseline are 2 years. Post recommends 2.5 years. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years. Mr. Fox was employed by the Syracuse Police Department. He separated in November of 2019. He was terminated by his department. He had 3 years of service. Sustained allegations are written false statement, willful falsification of an application to obtain certification. He was investigated November 21st, 2019. In October 2019, he completed an application for the Syracuse Police Department and an application for post. Both applications ask questions about Fox receiving discipline from any former or current law enforcement agency that he has worked for. In December 2018, Fox received a verbal warning from the law enforcement agency he was working for. On July 31st, 2019, Fox received a written warning from the law enforcement agency he was working for. Fox did not document his warnings on his post application or his Syracuse police application. In November 2019, Fox admitted to receiving verbal and written warning. He admitted he did not document the verbal or written warning, and an order default was signed. He did not respond to the investigation. I have nothing further.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Beattie? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and ask for a motion.
Mike Adams, I move to support the post recommendation.
I have a motion from Director Haddon to accept the recommendation from post.
Chair Pulsifer for second.
And Chair Pulsifer for second?
Yes.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, do we have all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. Seeing none opposed, the motion passes. Next is Joseph Hawes.
Is Mr. Hawes present or is counsel for Mr. Hawes present?
Hawes present.
This is Joseph Hawes. I'm present.
Hey, is counsel present for you, Mr. Hawes?
Negative, just myself.
Okay, thank you, sir. The sustained allegations in this case are falsification or alteration of a government record and official misconduct. The guidelines are call for 1 year. Post recommends 1.5 years. The range is 3 months to 2.5 years. The officer was working for the Utah County Sheriff's Office, but he transferred to Pleasant Grove prior to the investigation. He had 4 years of service. He's currently employed. Joseph Hawes was investigated for missing property. The investigation disclosed Hawes did not properly handle citizens' property on multiple occasions. The investigation disclosed Hawes documented in his report that he booked a coin that had been turned in as found property. Weeks later, while cleaning out his patrol car, Hawes found the coin in his vehicle and chose to throw it in the trash. Hawes did not document his actions. Another instance involved a necklace belonging to a female who had been arrested earlier. The necklace had been overlooked the night the female was arrested. The necklace was placed in an envelope given to Hawes. Hawes attempts to contact the female but was unsuccessful. Hawes told his department that it may have been thrown away. The internal investigation determined Hawes had not been completely truthful. During the post-Garrity interview, Hawes confirmed he had reported he had booked the coin into evidence. Hawes said he recognized the coin when he found it in his car weeks later and chose to throw it into the trash. Hawes was also asked about the necklace. Hawes confirmed he'd been given an envelope containing the necklace that belonged to the female he previously arrested. Hawes located the envelope in his vehicle, weeks later and threw the envelope in the trash. The two incidents occurred on different dates. When asked why he threw the two items away, Hawes stated he was afraid others would find out about his improper handling of the evidence and feared being teased about it by several fellow officers. He failed to respond to the notice of agency action and order of default was entered against him. I have nothing further.
Any questions for Ms. Vitti? Hearing none, do I have a motion?
We want to hear from Joseph.
Is he there? I missed that. Is Joseph, are you there?
Yes, I'm present.
Sorry about that. I didn't realize you were on one. Go ahead.
You're okay. I would just like to be heard a little bit. I understand what was how the investigation played out. I just want to state on the record that I am sorry as to how this has played out. I realize that my actions were negligent, and I don't know how else to say it other than I'm sorry. I don't exactly feel like it's justified to suspend me for a year and a half. It was a mistake. I feel like I'm a good cop. I love my job. I have no hard feelings towards law enforcement or how the investigators conducted themselves. I just want to make it stated on the record that I am sorry, and if you guys could find it in yourself to have mercy on me, I would ask that you guys do a letter of caution versus a suspension. And that's it.
Any questions?
My lesson is definitely learned. My fear of being teased does not outweigh what could have been done.
Any questions for Mr. Hawes? Ms. Beattie, anything additional?
I have nothing additional.
Do we have a motion?
Chief, Sheriff, yes. Noel, I don't have the guidelines here. I'm looking at the case and trying to go back and forth on my computer. What is the next level below the year and a half suspension and the guidelines?
You know, I don't have those in front of me. Do you have the Director Stevens?
The minimum was 3 months.
Sheriff Noel makes a motion for 3 months.
I have a motion for 3 months suspension. Do I have a second?
Wait a minute. Hey, just so the council knows, this is Director Stevenson. It's a Category D. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years.
Okay. So for clarification, okay. It's not 3 months. Does that change your motion, Sheriff?
Yes, it does. So 9 months. I'll make the motion for 9 months.
This is Category C here.
So I have a motion from Sheriff Noel for a 9-month suspension.
Sorry, my bad. It's Category D. Strike that.
Okay.
So Sheriff Noel, this is Marcus
Director,
it is 3 months to.
Okay.
Sorry, Chief.
Go ahead. Just so I'm clear who's talking.
3 months to, it's a Category D, 3 months to 2.5 years is what our range is.
And that's Category D, correct?
As in Delta, yes.
Delta.
Okay. Sheriff Noel, would you like to make a motion?
No, I think I'm gonna keep my motion at 9 months.
So I have a motion for a 9-month suspension from Sheriff Noel. Do I have a second?
John Crowley, I'll second it.
I have a second from John Crowley. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and ask for the vote. All of those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Do I have any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. The next is Roger Hill.
Is Roger Hill present or attorney for Roger Hill present? Roger Hill is not present. No counsel is present for Roger Hill. The sustained allegation in this case is possession of a controlled substance, possession of drug paraphernalia. The guidelines, it's a Category C and E. The guidelines call for a baseline of 2 years. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years. Post is recommending 2.5 years. Mr. Hill has 12 years of service. The aggravator is that there are multiple charges. In the criminal case, he pled guilty to possession of a controlled substance and possession of drug paraphernalia, both Class C misdemeanor. He was terminated by his agency, the Tooele County Sheriff. Roger Hill was investigated by a local police agency for assault, possession or use of a controlled substance, and possession of drug paraphernalia. The investigation disclosed that on August 6, 2019, Hill was involved in an argument with his wife. During the argument, police arrived on scene. Hill's wife told police that Hill used steroids. The local police agency located 6 vials of steroids and 1 syringe that was used to inject the steroids. Hill admitted to the local police agency that the steroids and the syringe were his. The assault was unfounded. The case was screened for the local county attorney, and charges were filed on Hill for possession or use of a controlled substance and possession of drug paraphernalia. Hill entered a plea in abeyance to the charge of possession or use of a controlled substance and possession of drug paraphernalia. During the Garrity interviews with both the department and post, Hill admitted to using steroids. He admitted that the steroids and syringe located by the police agency were his. He said he used a steroid to get ready for a bodybuilding competition. An order of default was entered against Mr. Hill. I have nothing further.
Any questions for Ms. Vitti? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion. Oh, go ahead.
Chad, so if I'd make the motion to follow post recommendation for 2.5 year suspension.
So I have a motion
second
from Chief Soap for a 2.5 year suspension. And I have a second from, sorry, I didn't catch who that was.
Sheriff Pulsifer.
Sheriff Pulsifer, thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for a vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes.
The next case is Charles Hoffman. Is Mr. Hoffman present or counsel for Mr. Hoffman present?
Counsel Rich Willey and Mr. Hoffman are both present in the same room.
Thank you. The sustained allegation in this case was lying under Garrity. The baseline is revocation. The range is 3 years to revocation, and Post recommends revocation. Mr. Hoffman was employed by the Bosqueville County Sheriff's Office for 26 years. There are no aggravators or mitigators, and there was no criminal case. In May of 2018, Charles Hoffman was investigated by his department for questioning officers from a different department about a conflict case the other department handled. During a department Garrity interview, Hoffman only admitted to speaking with two officers from the other agencies about the conflict case. Hoffman denied speaking with other officers about the conflict case or attempting to obtain information about the case. The IA identified four additional officers Hoffman had spoken with inquiring about the conflict case. A second department Garrity interview was conducted with Hoffman. He had admitted he brought up the topic of the conflict case to three or four officers who were identified after the first Garrity interview. Hoffman explained he asked one of the officers when the – he explained that he asked the one of the officers when the date and time of the incident was because he could not locate the information in the department report management system. Hoffman asked the second and third officers something about what happened during the conflict case. They did not recall any specific details. The sheriff's office sustained the allegation of lying under Garrity, and in September of 2018, Hoffman retired from the Bosqueville County Sheriff's Office. A hearing was held before an ALJ in December 2019, and the findings of fact and conclusions of law stated that, in fact, Mr. Hoffman had the judge did sustain the allegation of lying under Garrity. And nothing further. Mr. Willie or your client, would you like to speak?
Yeah, this is Mr. Willie, attorney for Mr. Hoffman. This case really has two significant issues for review. First, the first big issue, and not touched on by counsel for POST, is this case within the subject matter jurisdiction of POST? That is, does POST counsel have the authority to discipline Mr. Hoffman under these circumstances? The second issue is, did Mr. Hoffman lie during his interview? There's no doubt that Mr. Hoffman made statements that were inaccurate at the time of the interview. However, it's important to distinguish that inaccurate statements during an interview are not always equivalent to lies. In this case, Mr. Hoffman has a documented traumatic brain injury, and he also suffers from PTSD, and his therapist, Jason Williams, testified during the hearing before the ALJ that these two conditions in combination and in conjunction with other stressors in Mr. Hoffman's life are one way to explain how he may have forgotten to, certain details of questions that he is being asked during the interview. So I want to go to my first point first, and this is really most likely that the controlling issue in the case is whether POST has the authority to take action against Mr. Hoffman. And we know from under Utah statute that, POST counsel can take action against police officers in very specific circumstances, including falsifying a certification or an application for certification, lacking mental fitness for duty, addiction to alcohol or controlled substances, engaging in conduct that would be a criminal offense, lying under Garrity, sex on duty, and the inability to possess a firearm. But it's also important to note that the Utah legislature has expressly prohibited post counsel from suspending or revoking certification of a peace officer for a violation of a law enforcement agency policies, orders, or guidelines that do not amount to a cause of action above. So it's very clear that the Utah legislature does not want POST involved in investigating. Sorry, I have an alarm going off here, but does not want POST counsel involved in taking action against police officers based on policy violations. But the reason we're here today is because Mr. Hoffman is lying under Garrity. So before we discuss Mr. Hoffman's argument and why we don't think POST has jurisdiction in this case, I want to clarify the nature of a Garrity warning. as you guys are aware, under the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments of the Constitution, criminal suspects have a right against self-incrimination. But courts across the country have recognized that there's nothing inherently wrong with an employer pressuring an employee to cooperate with an internal affairs investigation or punishing somebody who doesn't. Employers sometimes need information from their employees, and you know, private employers especially may fire an employee who refuses to answer. But in the case of a law enforcement agency, information gleaned during an interview may be used for prosecutorial purposes, and when the employer has the means to penalize the exercise of constitutional privilege, like remaining silent, this is something that's not permissible, which was why we have a Garrity warning. The Garrity warning comes from Garrity versus New Jersey, where the Supreme Court held that when a law enforcement employer obtains statements from employees under the threat of removal from office, those statements cannot be used in subsequent criminal proceedings against the employee. Now, the corollary and the takeaway from Garrity and the very purpose of a Garrity warning is that a police officer who has invoked his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination may only be disciplined for failing to answer questions if he is first given a warning that includes the assurance that his answers cannot be used against him in any subsequent criminal prosecution. That is the essence of the Garrity warning, and the purpose of the Garrity warning is twofold. It's to put the employee on notice that there is a penalty situation, and it creates it allows the agency to discipline an employee for invoking his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. So it's well established that there, for a Garrity warning to apply, there has to be two critical components. The question must relate to an underlying crime, or at least a reasonable possibility of an underlying crime. And second, the government must have created some sort of penalty situation or some sort of threat to compel information. The Utah Court of Appeals has recognized that police departments routinely engage in the practice of advising officers who are the subject of an internal affairs investigation that their answers will not be used in criminal prosecution, while also warning of the investigation that the refusal to answer may be grounds for termination. But the Court of Appeals has also recognized that Garrity warnings are unnecessary when they are only in reference to a policy violation and there's no threat of criminal proceedings. Now, this is very important to this case because the practice of law enforcement agencies to place every officer under Garrity when they're conducting an internal affairs interview, whether or not the subject of the interview is a violation of the criminal statute, artificially extends post-counsel's authority and is contrary to the intent of the Utah legislature's prohibition on post-counsel to suspend or revoke the certification of a peace officer for violation of law. Of a law enforcement agency's policies, general orders, or guidelines of operation that do not amount to a cause of action under the previous section. So that those are the seven or eight things that I talked to, one of those being lying under Garrity. Essentially, what the legal framework we're looking at is when a police agency misuses Garrity warnings in an IA interview where there's no risk of criminal liability, and then post later uses its authority to investigate allegations of being untruthful after lying in the Garrity, it is acting outside the bounds set by the legislature because it is essentially investigating policy violations. The Utah legislature was very clear. It only wanted post investigating these interviews when there's a criminal element.
Mr. Willie, this is Victoria Freeland. Can I ask you a question at this juncture?
Yes.
Is it your position that the sheriff's office in this case, that there was no possible way that they could have been that there could have been a possibility of criminal violations?
That is what the investigator testified to during the hearing before the ALJ. That was a question posed to the investigator, whether we'll get into it contains both parts, but we'll get into why Garrity was appropriate and the scope was limited to a certain part of the interview, but for the rest of the interview it wasn't appropriate, and based on how the interview was conducted, the rest of the interview was not under Garrity. So we can just,
wait, I want to back up because I want to make sure I'm understanding your position correctly. I think that your position is that when there is, when these investigations originate and there is only the potential of policy violations and there is no potential of any type of criminal violations, it's inappropriate to issue Garrity and thus for POST to consider any statements that may have been given under Garrity with the originating law enforcement agency, correct?
It may or may not be inappropriate to issue a Garrity warning, but it is clearly outside the bounds of post statutory mandate to investigate those that the only underlying cause of action is a policy violation.
It's your position that at the onset of this, that there is no possible way that Box Elder County could have been investigating any criminal violations.
Box Elder County partitioned their investigation, their interview, into part that was covered by Garrity, and I'll explain the reasons why I think that, and part that was not covered by Garrity. So I'll just jump into the facts because these were...
Before you get there, I just want to make sure for purposes of clarity, and this is probably a question for Mr. Yaki, isn't this a legal argument that the council really doesn't have the ability to adequately address?
We thoroughly addressed this last year in our last appeal to the Court of Appeals, that the Post Council has the authority to review the order of the ALJ, and to my knowledge,
that's a different issue than what you're asking us to do here. You're asking this council to essentially the argument that's been made to this point is that Post doesn't have the authority to do anything because of X, Y, and Z. I think that is a legal issue about powers granted by the legislature. Am I wrong on that, Marcus?
So this is Marcus Yaki, legal counsel, Post Counsel. So I would agree with Victoria, I was going to say, Ms. McFarland. But in regards to that, this is a legal argument. And in regards to that, I believe the council should proceed with this matter. I believe on this issue we do have subject matter jurisdiction and to proceed with this.
We haven't covered the facts that would indicate that they don't have subject matter jurisdiction. We're only discussing the legal framework at this point.
But you've made the argument that we don't have the ability, that the Post Council does not have subject matter jurisdiction, and now you're saying we haven't discussed the facts. That's what we're saying. Irrespective of whatever facts are that you may present, that the council does not have subject matter jurisdiction, that's a legal argument, and that's not something that is within what I believe the Court of Appeals decision or framework. I don't think that is something that this council appropriately considers.
Do you have any legal basis for making that assertion?
Either in statute or
post rules.
It is included in 536.211 sub E, which is under Title 53 of the Public Safety Code, specifically governing the Peace Officer Standards and Training Act. And it states the council has authority to suspend or revoke certification of a peace officer if the peace officer under sub E refuses to respond, fails to respond truthfully, or fails to respond truthfully to questions after having been issued a warning based on Garrity versus New Jersey. That provision provides this council with the ability to determine if suspension or revocation is appropriate based on a failure to answer or false information provided underneath Garrity.
Well, Mr. Hoffman answered all the questions that were for the Garrity portion of the interview. The result of that portion of the interview found that he made no false statements under Garrity, and there was no policy violations or criminal violations for
according,
that.
Well, and this is where I'm going to back up, because according to the looking now at the notice of agency action, it appears that there is on February 12th, 2019, Garrity interview was conducted with Hoffman at Post. He was questioned about his initial statement that he only spoke to two officers about the family fight during the first interview given by his department under Garrity. And then it continues to say he was specifically asked if he spoke outside to two outside agency officers in addition to the first two that he mentioned. And he indicated that, let's see. Sorry, just scrolling here, and it looked like he didn't remember, but admitted the conversation with the first of the two, but admitted speaking with the second officer.
So just for clarification, this is Mark Ishaki with Post Counsel. So this is very clearly within Post Counsel's purview, and I would.
Well, I haven't finished my argument to explain why it's not, because, you know, the county very specifically said that the only reason Mr. Hoffman was there for that interview was to question him about the veracity of a report. That was the only reason that they were there, and they induced him to forego certain rights in a statement of rights and his Garrity warning. They induced him to forego those rights based on their assertions that he was only going to be asked questions about his report. He answered the questions about the report fully. They stated they're fully satisfied with the answers they received. And as a result, that closed the Garrity portion of that interview. Anything that they asked after that, and most of what they did after that for an hour and 15 minutes was a counseling session. They weren't asking him questions. They were counseling him. And they, beyond that, the investigator involved testified that they were only relating to potential policy violations and had no bearing on any criminal statute. So the fact that they asked him, told him, hey, this is your Garrity interview. This is the only topic we're asking you about. They asked him about the topic. He answered about the topic. They said, we are fully satisfied with everything that we've asked you about this. Anything beyond that is not under Garrity for the purposes of post-statute. Now, an agency has authority to make determinations that he lied during an IA interview for policy violations and things like that. But the questions that they asked him were not under Garrity.
Mr. Willie, you need to summarize.
Is there anything else, Mr. Willie? Because at this point, I'm going to instruct Post Counsel to continue. This is a legal argument. If you'd like to address this later on in an appeal to the Court of Appeals, you're more than welcome to. But at this point, I believe there is sufficient information to show that this is clearly under Post Counsel's jurisdiction with the Garrity interview conducted by both. If you'll allow me to finish, sir, this is clearly under Post Counsel's jurisdiction, and with a Garrity interview both conducted at Box Elder and at Post. The law is very clear, as Victoria McFarland stated, the council has the authority to suspend or revoke the certification of a peace officer if the peace officer refuses to respond or fails to respond truthfully to questions after having been issued a Garrity warning. There's a lot of background in regards to this as why the legislature put this in there, in regards to why an officer needs to respond truthfully in regards to Brady Giglio issues.
this is a very important issue that is addressed by the legislature and by our officers. Our officers, their primary position is to be witnesses on the stand, and if they cannot respond truthfully to their employers, that's an issue. So I believe this is clearly satisfies the jurisdiction of post counsel, and I would encourage them to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Yockey. The statute, Mr. Willie, the statute is clear, and the purpose of Garrity is irrelevant at this point. We're moving forward. Thank you.
All right. And have a comment.
What's
that?
Who's this?
Before we move to the second point.
Chief Swanson has a comment.
Yeah, Alex, Chief Swanson, go ahead.
Hopefully this is not inappropriate to bring up, but something that maybe needed to be considered, maybe it was and it's just not mentioned, is that Mr. Hoffman also admitted that he had searched records management systems and dispatch logs, which possibly could be a BCI violation. So just some food for thought.
Great. Thank you.
Everyone, this is Dr. Sharkis. I have a question regarding the claim of a PTSD diagnosis and brain injury. Could the counsel please hear what the professional training of Mr. Hoffman's therapist is?
I think we're okay. We can listen to that. I don't believe we need to go into counsel session because we're talking more about his qualifications and not the patient. Is that correct?
Correct. That's all I'm asking. I'm just asking what
correct.
The training is.
This is Mark here for clarification, just really quick.
Okay, one at a time. Please
tell
me who's speaking because I'm trying to track this.
No, you're good. This is Marcus Yockey. In regards to Dr. Checkett's stuff, we may proceed. I don't think we need to go into a closed session or anything because he's just asking about clarification to the individual.
And I'll respond just briefly on the qualifications of Mr. Hoffman's therapist. We at the hearing before the ALJ, we went thoroughly through his qualifications. He was qualified as an expert to testify to Mr. Hoffman's condition. And he has been seeing Mr. Hoffman for an extended period of time.
This is Linda Beattie. During the hearing, it was determined that, in fact, the therapist is, first of all, not a doctor, and secondly, he's not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. He's a family therapist. He's a family counselor. And the judge considered those defenses that were raised just now by his counsel, and the judge rejected those defenses and sustained the charges.
Okay.
And to be clear that the...
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
This is Dr. Checkett. So for clarification, the therapist noted is a family therapist. The therapist noted is not a neurologist, not a medical doctor, but instead a family therapist, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
All right. So to the second part of the
who's speaking?
Mr. Hoffman's argument.
Who's speaking?
This is Mr. Willie.
Please notify me who's speaking because I'm trying to track this. This is the chair. Thank you.
And this is Mr. Willie. To Mr. Hoffman's second argument, he simply did not have the requisite mens rea to be guilty of refusing to respond or to respond truthfully under Garrity. The questions that are at issue come during a 7-minute window of an interview that was almost 2 hours long. The questions were asked in a very confusing way and by the investigator's own opinions. The investigation itself was not conducted in a very clear manner. And to add upon that, the therapist mentioned before testified that Mr. Hoffman has a documented TBI through the Department of Veterans Affairs. He is also being treated by that therapist for post-traumatic stress disorder, and the combination of those two ailments make each other worse. And during that time, Mr. Hoffman was
experiencing extreme stress from a variety of different sources in his personal life, in addition to the just to the way that the investigation itself was being conducted, and for those reasons he was unable to recall details of conversations that he that when the questions were being posed of him. I'd like to give Mr. Hoffman a couple minutes to address the council on these points.
Go ahead, Mr. Hoffman, and then we need to finish up here.
Well, sir, thank you. Just wanted to just relay at the time I was experiencing, like I said, quite a bit in a marriage situation that was going on. I was brought in about this time over this original Garrity warning, and my impression was in relation to a few months before there was a report that was in question and some other things about a just a general report of a case that I had handled. So my impression at the time, when I had asked them what it was about when they had read the Garrity, they told me it was about that. And so basically I kind of went forward with that due to those statements. And then I believe my interview was about almost 2 hours. And the initial part of that, I don't know how long it was, but I was pretty much counseled after that about some other things. And then at the time, I was also displaced out of my home, and then I was had to be moved again during this time. You know, a lot of stressors going on with that, with the ex-wife as well. And then I also was getting reports on a couple cases where there was people telling me that they were being approached by one of my officers that was over me about they were asking questions, and I was never being told of any IA going on at the time. So it was causing me a little concern and stress on top of that because it was unrelated to anything about this. And then I just want to say that it's been a long road, but I've been trying to, you know, do better to treat the cases that I have and get treatment for that.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Hoffman?
I have a question. Sheriff Noel?
Sheriff Noel, please.
The question does not have anything to do with the Garrity interview. The question has to do with the initial investigation of the family fight. Reading into the alleged facts, you attempted to obtain the report yourself off of your Spillman system or whatever system it was. Is that correct, Officer Hoffman?
Upon the beginning of my shift, I usually checked activity going on. I believe it was the first of my weekend back, and it's common to check the activities going on in general. And so that was the only thing I had done, which was a common practice.
And
the question
is,
did you attempt to obtain the criminal investigation report that you were the primary suspect in? Did you attempt to get that from your computer system?
No, we just need to clarify one thing. Mr. Hoffman is not the was not the suspect of the report. And secondly, the Box Elder County Sheriff's Office specifically looked for access to the woman, and they were unable to find any instance of Mr. Hoffman looking up this case. Although they did find many other, you know, officers doing it, you know, outside the scope of policy, they did not find a case of Mr. Hoffman doing it.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Hoffman? Hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and ask for a motion.
And before we have that motion, I just want to preserve some issues for appeal. I understand that Pulse Council wants to get through everything, and I was not finished with my legal arguments. I just want to make clear that I'm not waiving any legal arguments on appeal. So.
Thank you.
And this
Chairman
is
Carpenter,
Chatso.
Go ahead. Who's speaking?
This is Chad. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm not sure.
Chad Soap, I was just going to say I need to recuse myself because Mr. Hoffman worked for me in the Garland Police Department at the time.
For the record, please show that Chief
Soap.
All right, Mr. The name is recusing himself. Sorry. I got too many things going on here. Go ahead. Go ahead, Linda.
Okay, this is Linda Beattie. And with respect to the defenses that were raised with respect to PTSD and what is his other defense with respect to memory loss, I'm just reading item 18 in the findings of fact in the ALJ's decision. Quote, there is no evidence that Hoffman suffered short-term memory loss due to the extent that his superior officers were aware of the issue, nor is there any evidence that it affected his ability to do his job as a police officer. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Hearing none, I'm going to ask for a motion.
Christy Morin.
I have a motion. Go ahead, Christy.
I'd just like to accept revocation.
I have a motion from Christy Morin to accept revocation. Do I have a second?
Bruce Bailey, second.
I have a second from Bruce Bailey. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Our next is James, I'm not sure how you say that, Hotalen? Hotalen? Hotalen.
Okay, with respect to the case of James Hotalen, is Mr. Hotalen or his counsel present? Okay, no one is responding. Mr. Hotalen and his counsel are not responding, so I assume they are not present on this call. The sustained allegations in this case are lying under Garrity and impersonation of an officer. The baseline guideline is called to revocation. The range is 3 years to revocation. It's class A and D. Post recommends revocation. Mr. Hotalen was employed by the Utah Constable Services in Washington County. There was a criminal case in this matter. He was found guilty of impersonation of Class B in justice court, but he appealed the charge, and impersonation was dismissed in district court. He does have the aggravator of a previous post case in suspension. And I actually, that previous post case was failure to, I can't read my handwriting. Perhaps Mr. Yaki can help me with that failure to do something that he got a 3-year suspension for, and I can't read what I wrote.
Quite right. Just one second.
Yeah. It was in 2013. Failure to pay a fine, maybe?
While you're looking that up, for the record, Sheriff Pulsifer, apparently that he works for Washington, Utah County Constables, and then it says Washington County Constables. Is that any kind of conflict for you?
Yes, I need to recuse myself. He was employed as the constable through Washington County, and I actually was part of the board as well as when the complaint came through.
So for the record, please show that Sheriff Pulsifer has recused himself.
If Mr.
Okay, and
I want to continue, I'll find it and provide the information.
I found it. I have it right here. It was failure to pay over a fine or forfeiture fee. Okay, let me go back to my document.
Give me just a moment to go back to that window. Okay. So on September 3rd, 2018, James Potallin, a certified special functions constable, was investigated for a traffic violation and impersonating an officer. He was driving his silver Dodge Charger on I-15 and pulled up beside a restored 1971 Chevrolet Chevelle. Potallin claimed the Chevelle had California license plates, was in and out of the HOV lane and cut him off. Potallin said he drove up next to the Chevelle, shook his finger at the occupants, and told them to slow down. He said he did not remove his badge from his vehicle's visor and did not show the occupants of the Chevelle his badge. Potallin said he never had his badge in his hand when interacting with the occupants of the Chevelle, and the occupants of the Chevelle claimed Potallin flashed his badge at them with his hand.
We have some background music noise.
Please on hold.
Does someone need to mute? Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on.
Chris, you're going to have to just mute everybody. Somebody put their line on hold, and we're getting their hold music. So, Chris, if you just mute.
You have been muted.
Just one sec, Chief.
Your microphone has been turned on.
Hello?
Okay, try that again.
Try it again, Miss VD.
All right. Thank you.
Can you hear me now?
Do we need to do a roll call, or are we good?
I think we're still good.
Okay, go ahead then.
We're still good.
Thank you.
Okay. The occupants of the Chevelle claimed that Holland slashed the badge at them with his hands, told them he was watching them, and told them to slow down. During a Garrity interview with Post, Talon said as the Chevelle began to pass him on the left on I-15, he moved his visor, which was down to the side, back into its original position. He said the Chevelle passed him, and he said something like, nice car. The Chevelle backed off, took pictures of Talon's vehicle, and reapproached him. Talon said the occupants of the Chevelle were angry. Talon said he never did anything. The badge was on his visor, and he moved the visor, but he never indicated to them to pull over. He never tried to initiate a traffic stop, did not get behind them, and didn't do anything along those lines. On December 14, 2018, charges of impersonation of an officer and a traffic violation were filed on Talon with the local justice court. He was found guilty on July 16, 2019 of both charges. He appealed the court decision, and district court was found not guilty of the impersonation charge. I'm not sure if that's exactly what happened or it was dismissed. In any event, that charge was dismissed ultimately. Talon failed to respond to the notice of agency action on March 16, 2020, an order to default was entered against him. I have nothing further.
So, Chief, really quick, this is Marcus Yockey. The information provided by Ms. Beattie in regards to the previous post-action, council action, was substantiated allegation of failure to pay over fine, forfeiture, or fee, which is essentially collecting bail money and then failing to turn it over.
Saying that he collected it and did not turn it over, correct?
Correct. And so that's just for clarification on that.
Okay, thank you. Are we privy to the findings on that? I mean, was there any criminal action that went with that?
It just said pending. The last notice, the last indication we had was pending. I believe I looked it up, and it was reduced. I can give me one more second, and I can look that up.
Thank you. And if you could give us the date as well, thank you.
Yes, sir.
The date of the post action was November 20th, 2013. I don't know the date of any other action.
Thank you, Ms. Beattie.
I'm sorry, post council met on December 6th, 2016.
So the criminal charge I have associated with it, if I believe this is the one that's linking up with it, it was dismissed. Two counts were dismissed for theft and robbery.
Thank you. we'll go ahead and proceed unless anyone has any questions for Mr. Yockey.
Theft and robbery was dismissed. What about impersonation of an officer?
I'm just referring to the previous post action, the post council action. The impersonation.
Okay, thank you.
For the record, that was in 2013, not this case.
Correct.
Okay, I got it.
And in regards to this matter, so the current matter, we have an impersonation of a peace officer, disposition of 110 of 2020, was not guilty, but failure to use designated lane was found guilty.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Yockey? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and ask for a motion. Hearing none.
This is John Crowley. Motion to accept post counsel's recommendation.
I have a motion from John Crowley to accept post recommendation.
Swanson, second.
For revocation. And I have a second from, who is that the second from?
Swanson.
Chief Swanson. Any further discussion? I'll go ahead and call for a vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Next is Kyle Maddox.
Mr. Maddox, or is counsel for Mr. Maddox present?
This is Mr. Maddox. I'm here, yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Kyle Maddox, the sustained allegation with use of a controlled substance on two occasions. This is a Class C offense. The baseline is 2 years. The range is 9 months to 3.5 years, and POST is recommending 2.5 year suspension. Mr. Maddox was employed by the Washington County Sheriff's Office and was terminated. No criminal charges were filed. The aggravator is that there are multiple offenses. On December 31st, 2018, Kyle Maddox attended a New Year's Eve party at a home in Mesquite, Nevada. An individual at the party handed Maddox two THC edible candies, which he consumed. Maddox knew the candies contained THC. Later that night at the same party, a marijuana joint was passed to Maddox, who took possession of it, took a drag, and then passed the joint back to the group. While employed by the sheriff's office, Maddox tested with an outside agency. Maddox tested with an outside agency a few months later and disclosed the marijuana use during the pre-employment process. He was disqualified from testing for that agency as a result of the drug use, admitting the drug use. The next shift he worked after returning from that testing process, he was asked by his sergeant how the testing went. And it was at this time that he informed his sheriff that he was disqualified from testing with that outside agency because of his marijuana use a few months earlier. During Garrity interviews with both his department and post, Maddox admitted he consumed two THC edible candies, knowing the candies contained THC. During the Garrity interview, the IA interview, Maddox admitted he possessed and placed the marijuana joint to his lips, but denied smoking a joint. During the post-Garrity interview, Maddox admitted he took a drag off the marijuana joint. Maddox was allowed to resign from his department in lieu of termination.
Sir,
no criminal charges were filed.
This is Alan Swanson. I have a question.
Hey, before we proceed, Sheriff Pulsifer, I believe you need to recuse on this. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, for the record, please show the sheriff, Pulsifer has recused himself. Go ahead, Chief Swanson.
Chair?
I need a clarification.
Moore has something to say.
Okay, wait. Okay, let's back up.
Hello. Clarification. What I've got from Post here says that the offense is lying under Garrity and that the recommended discipline is revocation. And that is not what Mrs. Beatty just said.
Yeah, that's not
what it is. The what did I just say? Hang on a second. Hold on.
Jenna Moore has something to say.
We do have a revocation for lying under Garrity.
Copy that.
It should not be.
That was the lying under.
But he lied about it.
Okay.
So you just let me know what the correct information is. I'm reading off the case cover sheet that I was provided, so just let me know.
I'm looking at the same thing for the record. It does show revocation.
Okay, so this is Marcus Yockey with Post Counsel. So on this, on Mr. Maddox, Kyle Maddox, is who we're talking about, correct?
Correct.
So if you look at the notice of agency action and also the attached document for the ALJ's findings and conclusions of law, it's at the very end, it says count one, conclusions of law, the charge that on or about April 9th, 2019, Maddox violated 536.211E by refusing to respond or failing to respond truthfully to questions after having been issued a warning of Garrity is proven by clear and convincing evidence. Count two and three were withdrawn by Post with the stipulation that they would not be refiled.
Yes, that's correct. And let me just clarify that. I'm looking at this and I see what happened here. This case cover sheet, I think that, well, it's inaccurate. The case cover sheet doesn't reflect what happened at the hearing. He was, what Mr. Yockey just said is accurate.
So what is Post recommendation for clarification?
So it would be, I'll let Director Stevenson.
Director Stevenson, it's revocation.
Copy that. Thank you. Any questions? So do we have a motion or any further questions first? And if not, then I'll move for a motion.
Right, this is Tom Maddox. Do I have a chance to address the council?
Oh, yeah. Maddox, go ahead. It's strange not being in the room.
Yeah. Okay, no problem. Yeah, so I just want to admit, you know, I made a mistake with the marijuana use and everything encompassing that. I was involved with a person I should not have been when I was a police officer, and, you know, that's the reason I'm here. I am an honest person. That's why I'm here. I brought it up, and I wanted to do the right thing and take whatever punishment came with that. I understand my statements in the two interviews were inconsistent. I did not do that with the intent to lie. That was the only time I've ever used a marijuana joint. I don't know really how to describe smoking it or inhaling, but I'm not here to make excuses or anything like that. I just want to say I do, you know, appreciate how everything was handled. I admit my mistake. I was young and not thinking wisely when I should have been in my personal life, and that ended up costing me my job. But I do want to say just my integrity is important enough to me that I would risk losing my job, which ended up happening. But I've learned a lot from it, and I just want to be able to put it behind me and move forward. I'm 26 years old. I still have a lot of help and a lot of good I can do as a law enforcement officer, so I would ask the council to consider a suspension rather than revocation. But I do understand what I did is, you know, it was a mistake, and I've learned from it and grown from it. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Maddox? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and ask for a motion. Can you hear me?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
It's Colonel Rafferty. I'm just a quick question. So the issue that we've got before us with regard to the Garrity, is that just contained to the discrepancy in the statement of one time he said he just put the joint to his lips and the other time he admitted he actually inhaled or ingested the smoke. Is that the issue for the Garrity?
Yes.
Council, please. Okay, clarify.
Yes, that's correct, Colonel Ravitch. And just to clarify again, the actual charges of with respect to the controlled substance were dismissed by Post.
This is Swanson. Have a question.
Go ahead, Chief.
Linda, what's the range on this again?
I'm going to have to defer to Lieutenant Moore.
This is Director Stevenson. For Category A, the range is 3 years to revocation.
Okay. Well, then I would make a motion, a different motion, and go with a 3-year.
So I have a
Noel, and I second it.
Okay, let me clarify the motion. I have a motion from Chief Swanson for a 3-year suspension, and I have a second from Chief
Noel.
Well, any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Do we have any opposed? Hearing none, the 3-year suspension passes. Thank you. It looks like Dave Passmore is not on the agenda. We'll now move to Benjamin Wolford.
Okay. Mr. Wolford or counsel for Mr. Wolford, are you present? Okay, I hear no response from Mr. Wolford or counsel for Mr. Wolford. The sustained allegations in this case is falsification of a government document, a Category B. The baseline is 1 year. The range is 3 months to 2.5 years. Post recommends 1.5-year suspension. Mr. Wolford was employed by the Department of Natural Resources. He resigned. The aggravator, after 14 years, the aggravator in this case was that there are multiple charges. On May 20th, 2019, Mr. Benjamin Wolford was investigated by his agency for falsification of a government record. The investigation disclosed that on seven occasions, between March 2nd, 2018 and April 29th, 2019, Wolford submitted meal allowance forms that were fraudulent to collect meal allowance. His daily log for the date that he submitted the seven fraudulent meal allowance forms documented that he did not work the hours he claimed on another form. No criminal charges were screened. He resigned from his agency. During a Garrity interview with his department, he admitted the SI-48s, which are the document he submitted, were fraudulent. And he indicated he didn't want to participate in the post-investigation. He failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered against him. I have nothing further.
Any questions for Ms. Beattie? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and ask for a motion. Do we have a motion?
Well, Chief Swanson, go ahead and motion to go with what Post recommended.
So I have a motion from Chief Swanson to accept Post recommendation.
Second by Chadwell.
And who was my second there?
Chad Soap.
Chief Soap?
Correct.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and ask for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you.
Hey, Chair.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Who made the motion, Director Stevenson?
So.
For that last one.
The last one was. No, that he seconded.
Motion was
okay.
Swanson.
Motion was Chief Swanson.
Okay, and thank you. Thank you.
We'll now move on to in post discussion from Director Stevenson.
Yes, Council Chair, thank you. I sent out a question, an informal poll about chiefs and sheriffs, and the colonel also weighed in about NPOST and whether it's still a relevant test and whether it's a test that we want to maintain and continue with moving forward. I will just share with you some of my frustrations with NPOST, and it's not necessarily the test itself, but the company, Standard & Associates. We have been pushing for them for the last couple of years to make this an online application. And each time I contact them, they say,
you know, give us a couple of months. We have something that's in beta test, and that is our ultimate goal. From my end, I see no progression towards that. Now, the reason why I'm pushing for that is because I get chiefs and sheriffs and at the times a colonel frustrated that we can't get end post results in a timely manner. It usually takes about 2 weeks to get the results back. And that, when a person is struggling with those tests, that's a matter of them being dismissed from the academy or continuing to train. I have pulled some statistics regarding end post. Now, keep in mind, with these numbers, there's no limit to how many times an individual can take the series of tests. There's three tests, A, B, and C, and they can take those tests as many times as they want. So these numbers may seem big, but keep that in mind, that it could be, you know, a handful of people that are contributing to the high failure rate. But from July 1996 to December 2019, the end post has been taken approximately 69,000 times, actually almost 70,000 times. The average failure rate for that period is 48%. I broke it down. We have broke it down from by year. From 96 to 99, the failure rate was 40%. From 2000 to 2004, it was 43%. So you're seeing a little increase in failure rate as we progress. From 2005 to 2009, 45% failure rate. 2010 to 2014, 44, and then the last era was 2015 to 2019, which was 48%, for an average of 44% failure rate. By section, so there are four sections with this test. There's written, grammar, reading, and math. The written portion, it's a 5% failure rate for that individual section. For grammar, it's 24.5% failure rate. For reading comprehension, it's 10.5% failure rate. And for math, it's a 30% failure rate. Those are the numbers for that test. Salt Lake City, I met with Chief Brown, and we discussed end post and some of their frustrations as well. I talked to other administrators regarding this test. Now, again, in 96, the post council wanted this test and made it mandatory that every person prior to entering the academy has to take this test. We have searched our archives, and we do not have a definitive reason why the council made the decision. I'm just opining by saying it was probably that they saw, you know, reports were not up to par, and there were some issues with simple arithmetic and reading comprehension. Additionally, it could be that they wanted to provide a test that would give us a good barometer or indication of how they would perform at the academy. But I'm just speculating at this point. So the reason why I present this to you is it was kind of a mixed response from the administrators. A lot of the rural departments like this as a form of vetting for their hiring process. There were a handful of other departments that were larger that said that they would prefer to do some other form of testing. I looked at a couple of products, just a few, so you know this could be just on the high end, but those tests were about $100 a shot. And I'm worried about that cost because that could be prohibitive for somebody who can't afford it, therefore limiting our pool of selection anyway. So I present that to you and ask the council if you want to continue with the end post or if you want us to look at other products. Please, Chief.
My two cents, Director. A lot has changed since 1996 and now, and a lot more screening goes on into selecting our officers. I also think that just being able to pass the academy is a test in and of itself. And then on top of that, we have our own mini academy that they have to pass. So I would be in favor of doing away with it.
Okay. And I'm looking for a vote.
I would second that. That's Carpenter.
So Chief Carpenter, as chair, are you just giving an opinion or
just voting? Sharing an opinion? Sorry,
okay.
Sir.
Oh, you're good. Chair, I'm just clarifying. So,
just a strong opinion. Thank you.
Oh, you're good. Can I? If I can hear from the rural chiefs and sheriffs, just to get their input, that'd be great.
This is Sheriff Curtis.
Please, Sheriff.
So we've used it as kind of a predetermination tool to help them see if they're actually motivated enough to do it. So it's a helpful tool to us, but it's not an overall end-all, tell-all of what kind of an officer they're going to be. So had the same frustrations as well, but we have used it to help us in our selection process.
Thank you.
Sheriff Noel?
Please, Sheriff.
Director, from what I understand, this test, anyone that takes this test, it is no more stringent, I don't know what the wording would be on it, than a 12th grade senior, the knowledge. And we've found that individuals, the younger they are, when they get right out of school or their second year of college or something to that effect, have a much easier time than someone that is in their maybe 28 to 30 years old that takes it. Believe it or not, the ones that I've seen are the younger officers. They pass it a lot easier and are much better at doing it that way. When you go longer, it's harder for them to remember some of those math formulas, some of those ways to communicate and write in the writing portion of the test. So I'm like the other sheriff. I think it's a good tool for us to vet out some of the candidates that we do have apply. They haven't had many of the candidates take it the first time. We offer it to them for free. If they don't, I say you can go to any one of your universities and go take it a second time. And if they pass it, then they're good. So,
Chief Swanson?
Please, Chief.
Again, individual departments are still welcome to use that as a screening tool themselves. My recommendation is, though, it's not a requirement for post to use.
Duly noted. Also, if I can just kind of, I don't want to go into the next topic, but it touches on the COVID-19 situation we have. Right now, we have an academy due to start the 13th. Corrections has a couple of academies, and we can't get people in tested on the end post because all the testing centers have closed. And so it puts us in a situation, if we continue requiring it prior to coming into the academy, this is going to cause problems in the immediate future. But definitely, Chief Swanson, proposal, that's an easy fix in our administrative rule. And the departments can use that, just won't be a requirement to get into the academy or get accepted.
Okay,
Steve, do you feel that the agencies, if maybe not using this particular test, are you saying that they shouldn't have to have any type of a test then for them to be accepted into post?
Yes.
Correct. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
And the reason I'm saying that is because we go through a very stringent screening process ourselves before we ever sign them up for post. And then post itself, as I mentioned, is a test. I mean, if they pass post, then they're doing all right. And then on top of that, they've got to pass the mini academy with us. So, like I said, I'm in favor of each department still using it if they want to use it as a screening. I just don't think it should be a requirement to get into post.
Can I make a clarification? You're not saying that they shouldn't have to pass the post-physical entrance exam, correct?
No, I'm just talking about the
okay.
NASH in-post test.
All right, thank you.
Can I make a motion then?
Please.
Yeah. Unless we have further discussion, is there any further discussion?
This is John Crowley. I just have one quick little thing, if I could.
Please.
Yeah. So on the end post, you know, my fear is that we're going to have people go in the academy that isn't based on likelihood to succeed, because the end post kind of gives us a baseline that they can read, write, and understand what we're going to teach them in the academy. So I'd say just keeping the end post for the academy would probably be a good thing. Understand testing is difficult and getting the results back. 2 weeks isn't too bad. That's pretty fast compared to what we have out here in the basin. Ours is usually about 4 weeks before they find out. But I just want to put that in, that I don't want to send anybody that can pay for the academy into the academy on pretense that they could fail.
Yeah, Swanson. And again, this doesn't preclude individual departments from still using that as a tool. Some of the larger departments feel like they have a good enough screening process on their own. So, again, individual departments, use it if you want. Doesn't need to be a requirement to attend post, in my opinion.
And a follow-up to that, Chief, the only problem is what happens with those, I think the point that he just made was, what happens with those agencies that choose not to do that? They send an that's really a waste of time and really dollars for the state to send a candidate to post that isn't going to be able to graduate from it. Your agency, I understand, and my agency, will screen those out and we'll pick the best candidates. There are going to be agencies that are going to send a candidate to post, and it's just going to be a waste of time.
Yeah, and that's
dollars.
Yep, and that's on the agency, because the agency is paying the salary for that to get to go. And I don't know about you, I have actually had officers that have passed the impost and then have flunked out of the academy. Have you?
I have.
Yeah.
I have. Absolutely.
Okay. So that's my point, is passing the impost does not mean they're going to pass the academy. I think actually the academy is probably a bit harder than the national test that really doesn't hone in on the way Utah handles law enforcement.
Hey, Chair, I'm just going to wrap it, just kind of adding some content to the discussion. I think from the Highway Patrol side, we'll continue to use the end post just as a qualifier to make sure we're going to get them through the academic portion of post, but I'm supportive of not requiring it for post. That's what the group decides.
So do we have a motion?
This is Curtis. Make a motion then.
Go ahead. So I have a motion from Sheriff Curtis to accept not requiring the impost. Is that what you're saying?
So I do want to add one little part to that.
Okay.
Like academies, I think we should allow them to be able to include that as a requirement as part of to be accepted into the satellite academy.
So can you please clarify the motion?
So the motion would be that if post, that we don't require the impulse test, but still allow the satellite academies to require it as part of their acceptance process to the school or the satellite academies, and then leave it up to the individual agents.
Okay.
This is Director Stevenson. If I could ask kind of a clarifying question, or maybe just some foundation. Sheriff Curtis, can you explain to me your reasoning or logic?
The reasoning behind that, if I understood whoever was speaking about out in the Uinta Basin or the school, they used that as a tool to make sure that they were going to kind of gauge their successfulness for the course. So they use that as a process to make sure where they're at. That's the whole idea behind allowing them to allow that in the satellite academy. Because they don't want to.
And a lot of those individuals attending the colleges and those other satellite academies are self-sponsored, not actually being sponsored by an agency.
Okay.
That's why I asked to be allowed that, if they feel like it's necessary to make sure those students are successful, that they be allowed to require that as well.
my thought process is.
Here's Lieutenant Garcia.
Lieutenant Garcia. My thought process is on that, and it might be a bad way to look at it, but they're paying their own money or scholarships or whatnot to go to this satellite academy. If they graduate or don't graduate, that's on them, right? And then if they do graduate, you guys are going to be the ones that are hiring them. Therefore, you would do your background investigation and choose the best candidate that you had. And if it was that individual from the Satellite Academy, was that individual. But I think putting a restraint on the satellites and not ours might be a little bit difficult. Or problematic for the Satellite Academies.
Well, if the Satellite Academies don't care, then I'll not accept it. We don't need or require the impulse test anymore.
Director Stevenson?
Yes.
One last caveat before we vote on this.
Okay.
At the bare minimum, if we choose to not do this anymore as post, that's mm-hmm. fine. But I would at least like to have a report back, preferably from you, let's say in a year from now, to see if there's if this has made any positive or negative. Maybe there's no changes.
So like a higher failure rate or struggle in the academy though, for those that did not take
exactly.
the impulse? Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. Will do.
So we still have a motion on the table from Sheriff Curtis, unless he withdrew his. I'm not sure. Did you withdraw your motion, or did you modify your motion?
Curtis, I just modified it to say that we no longer need the or will require the impulse test for students at the academy.
At any academy, correct?
The academy. That's correct.
Swanson, okay. Second.
I got a second from Swanson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, it passes. Thank you. Now, Director Stevenson, did you have post-COVID-19 response?
Yes, this is just by way of information to let the council know what the post staff is doing to, one, stay within the guidelines of the governor and his order, and then also the COVID-19, also the national recommendations is trying to create social distancing and whatnot. So for those that have recruits in the academy now, 3-4, 8, 3-4, 9, and 3-50 that will start in April. 3-4-9 just, did everybody pass?
Yes,
everybody passed their SFO test. We moved that class for the last week of training to a virtual classroom utilizing Adobe Connect, and it went very smoothly. And they all passed and are waiting to resume the academy, hopefully April 13th. The class 348 was in Leo. That's a group of 57 recruits. We pushed through with training. At this point, 18 have passed, and I hope to report that all of them will have passed this Sunday. So we've worked weekends and some late nights to get this class out into the field to get out ahead of the COVID-19 virus. From this day moving forward, we're going to utilize virtual classrooms for all the talking head or face-to-face instruction. And then the skill base, I sent out a questionnaire via the associations asking about the resources that they have at their disposal for those that have recruits coming into those academy classes. Just to find out what we have statewide, because we're going to have to keep these groups very small, especially with DT, where it's a very intimate class, and, you know, sweating and exchanging. Never mind. Anyway, it's very close contact with DT, and we're just trying to minimize that as much as possible. So I'm waiting for feedback from the agencies to find out what resources they have. If not, we're going to have to extend the academy potentially
to get everybody through those skill-based areas of the curriculum. So I just need a little latitude and approval from the council so that we can keep the doors open and officers getting trained and out into the field. I may have to ask for more time temporarily to get them through this session. So that is my plan for this day moving forward. Do I have any objections to extending it by a couple of weeks to get them through the training?
No, this is Chief Swanson. First, I'm sure everyone else feels the same. I'd like to thank you, Director, and your staff for making the necessary adjustments to get that class through. And also, I think it's completely understandable if you have to extend it by a couple of weeks and would be supportive of that.
Thank you, Chief. Any other comments?
I agree. You and your staff have been very inventive to make this happen, and I know it's a very tough time, and we really appreciate your efforts of also putting out the post workouts that we can share with our department. I know our department was very appreciative of that as well.
Well, very good. Thank you. We're all in the same boat. I also want to touch on in-service, just in case some of you did not see the in-service email I sent out. We have a plan, so anybody who does not have the 40 hours of in-service training that's required to be completed June 30th, we have a proposal or a plan to throw out a couple classes every week to keep them on course to getting their 40 hours. Any training through this program will automatically populate into their CADIS profile. And that way, if you guys want to mandate that they go through all of the training, if they do all the 40 hours, you would not be required as a department to submit the hours because it will automatically go into their CADIS profile, and therefore we can audit them without disturbing you. However, any training outside of a post program will still need to be reported to post per our audit. So just by way of information. And I think that is it. Any questions for me or any guidance moving forward?
Hearing none. I will go ahead and ask for a motion to adjourn. Go ahead. Sorry.
We need to schedule a tentative meeting.
Oh, yes. Okay. Tentative meeting schedule. Any suggestions?
We usually go the first part of June. Let's go towards the end of June. How about the 24th?
Works for me.
Looks okay for me.
This is Sheriff Curtis, I may not be here if we're not.
That's National Sheriff's
anymore.
Oh, is it National Sheriff's? Okay.
How about the week before?
When are we talking?
June 17th.
I'm good.
I have an. If we do it in the morning, I'm fine. In the afternoon, I'm tied up on IACP executive board stuff.
Let's do 10 o'clock. Is that good?
That works. 17th.
June 17th, 10 o'clock, here at Post.
Yes.
Okay. Any objections to that date?
Nope.
Okay, we'll do that. June 17th, 10 o'clock.
This is Mike Cabin. I move to adjourn.
Got a motion to adjourn. Second. Do we have a second to adjourn?
No move.
Is that Pulsifer? All right.
Yep.
Thank you, and thank you all for meeting is adjourned, and thank you all for your time. I know that you're all very, very busy. I hope you're all safe and well, and our prayers are with you. Thank you.
Thanks everybody.
Thanks, Council.
Thank you.
Thanks.